Welcome to episode 191 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week we read Justice League of America's Vibe by Andrew Kreisberg. And now the cast begins.
My car was stolen, so that was exciting. But then I got it back.
Your car was stolen?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And they also took everything in my trunk, which was pretty much like a broken umbrella and a muddy towel and like jumper cables that were really, really, really rusty.
Okay. Oh, there we go. All right, good.
Now I had one of my old, when I was long, a few years ago, one of my, like, my old car was stolen and they stole the tape deck.
Oh. They tried my radio, but it's like broken, so it was turned on, but I think they decided it wasn't worth the effort when it didn't work. Yeah. And they didn't even drive it around. They like drove it two blocks because I still had a full tank of gas when I got it back.
It's random. They probably like broke into it, stole it. I'm like, never mind.
Well, yeah, they did take the battery and the spare tire, but the insurance covered it, so.
Cool.
Yeah, it was just, like, I was working, and I get a call from the SJPD, and they're like, you know, did you loan your car to someone? Do you know where it is? I'm like, no. And I'm talking to someone at work on AIM, and I'm just like, oh, gotta go, my car was stolen. Because I had, like, allowed someone else to use my parking space, so I moved the car out to the street, and sometime in the middle of the night, someone took it. And someone stole, like, a Honda on the same street that day. So, I spent my week calling insurance and being like, you're gonna pay me. What about you guys? Oh, how's your new place, Andy?
It's nice. I like it. I like it a lot. We just need to finish moving in.
Cool.
Is there still stuff at your old place?
No, all the stuff is here. It's just, you know, you're in boxes for like a month. So.
Yeah.
That's how it goes.
Yep. Yep, yep. Okay. You guys ready for this?
I guess so.
Yeah.
That's kind of my reaction, David.
So unenthused.
Okay, everybody. Welcome to another vested episode of the Atomic Pirate Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
That's dope. I didn't help myself. So there was precedent for that. In our show notes, someone linked a YouTube video of Vibe in the Justice League cartoons.
Oh, yeah!
In a breakdancing competition.
So, yeah, this is
and
supposed
to... And it was actually a million times better than this comic!
So, okay, before we get into it, we read Justice League of America's Vibe. This is the new 52 incarnation of Vibe, collecting issues 1 through 10. By Andrew Kreisberg and Jeff Johns. I don't know, Jeff Johns is a credit on the trade, but I didn't see him on any of the singles, like on the covers, so I don't know, I guess he's involved like somehow, but I think it was mostly Andrew Kreisberg. For Kreisberg, I don't know.
Yeah, he Kreisberg actually wrote the comic. I think Jeff Johns probably had to do with like plotting and stuff, because it ties into the Justice League comic that Johns is doing.
I don't know. That makes sense.
He didn't actually write the comic. That was whatchamacallit. Andrew Kreisberg.
Yeah. So, this was not musical at all. I'm really disappointed.
No.
Because this is supposed to be episode 2 of our like our music themed heroes. Because the old vibe was definitely music related, right?
Well, he was a break. He did breakdancing, but
yeah.
Like, if you look at his, even if you look look at his Wikipedia page, like, it doesn't really talk about that, you know, that aspect of him. If you, but I mean, he had, like, you know, he had some, I don't know, he had breakdancing in a relation, like, was part of his, like, persona. And then, additionally, if you look at, like, Crisis on Two Earths, mm-hmm. there's a character called Breakdance, who is the evil version of Vibe.
That's beautiful. That's way better than Rupture.
Oh, because his brother's Rupture, right?
Yeah. Dude, like, from the first couple pages, like, you know, like, something terrible is going to happen to one of those three brothers. You know it. You fucking know it. Right from the start. And it turns out something terrible happens to, like, all of them.
Yeah. what did you guys think of this comic? I mean, I kind of got an idea of what N thought.
It would have been vastly improved by breakdancing. That's all I'll say.
Like, there wasn't anything, like, horrible about this comic, I'll say. But there also wasn't anything, like, remarkable about this comic. This comic was just kind of there, you know? And I think it's because, like, mm-hmm. when they did the New 52, I don't know. I don't know if this is one of the first ones or where this fits in the New 52 relaunch. But I feel like with New 52, they took a bunch of characters. This is like the second wave, or?
So, okay. Well, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I will continue what I was saying. This came out actually in 2013, which is 2 years after the relaunch. And he was part of Justice League America. And I guess this storyline that we read is kind of like a prequel to him joining the JLA, and so the JLA and the New 52, the whole like idea behind them was to be a counter for the Justice League in case they ever went rogue. And Vibe's, they don't really, I mean, they show it in here because when Vibe fights Kid Flash, they talk about, oh, he interrupts the Speed Force.
Yeah.
Like, so that's the whole reason why he's on the JLA. So if the JLA, or if the Justice League goes bad, he can fight Flash.
Ah. Okay, that kind of makes sense. But just, it feels like they were throwing a bunch of characters at the wall to see what would stick. You know, the first couple years of New 52. And this is one that felt like it just got thrown on the wall. And I don't know. It's not that the character's bad. Vibe has, like, the original Vibe from Justice League Detroit has its own little, like, cheesy niche, which is awesome. Like, breakdancing vibrational superhero. That's horrible and ridiculous, and that guy should be on a team with Nort and all the other lame, like, D-list heroes. And that would have been awesome. I would have really dug that. But this, they're like, they didn't go the cheesy route. They tried to make him, like, seem powerful, but his powers were so ambiguous. I don't know. It just felt like he was just there, and he just did energy things at people when he wasn't, like, looking through the interdimensional rift.
I think part of the problem with the comic is kind of like what you talked about, Andy, how, you know, the original incarnation of Vibe was this kind of goofy character, whereas this Vibe, you know, they're trying to make him a more serious character. They're not trying to make him, like, gritty, but he's just a more serious character.
Yeah.
But I think they only went halfway because his costume is still ridiculous, like the mm-hmm. vest.
Yeah. His costume was one of my favorite things about this comic.
But right, like my point, but the thing as I'm saying is I don't feel like the vest or not the vest. I mean, the vest is part of it, but the costume as a whole, I don't think really vibes with the tone of the comic.
Yeah, I mean,
I feel like maybe they kept that costume as like a throwback to the original one, but that's not they don't need to do that. They could say, okay, this is Vibe, and then this is his, this is Vibe in the New 52, and he's not the same character, and that's okay. He could have similar powers. I think they're trying to make him, his powers similar, but also make him more powerful.
Yeah, and the interdimensional thing is really cool. It really is. The way he can, like, tap into the Speed Force and disrupt that, and, like, if you extrapolate that, maybe he could become a speedster with a certain amount of, like, energy for a short period. Like, there's a whole bunch of different directions you can go with these powers. Like, maybe he learns how to tap into energy from multiple dimensions and kind of vibrate in different, like, there's all kinds of things you can do with his powers here, but it's, like, for the whole thing, it's just, like, blast! Blast! It's just so dull.
They try to focus it. They're like, you know, he can make things appear. He can see through people's, like, time streams. But then they just, it's throwaway. It's more like plot device than actual, like, look at this cool thing that this character can do. And I don't know. Like, I feel like they introduced it with technobabble. Because Gunn says, your internal vibrational frequency is no longer in sync with the rest of the world. Like, that, to me, that sounded really hokey. And you can do all these cool things with the character, it's just they don't. And they kind of leave it up to you to think about it. But they, I don't know, they could have showed us something, like, way cooler than what they did.
See, and if you don't do that stuff, like, I understand, because he's young, right? Like, he just got his powers. Like, you can only expect so much out of a kid, you know? But
yeah, but, I mean, he seemed to get it, right? Like, by issue 10, he actually seems to be in pretty good control, or, like, have a good understanding of what he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, if you're gonna, I don't know, if you're gonna make the powers kind of not the draw for the comic, then the guy needs to be interesting. And, like, Cisco felt more tabula rasa. Like, his two brothers had way more depth, or at least I was way more interested in his brothers than I was in him. You know? Like, I was interested in Dante being this deadbeat. Like, you know, as a kid, he was like, I got a different way. I'm going to make my money. I'm going to make it playing soccer. And then he grows up and he realizes that he's really just kind of okay at soccer. You know, and but Dante steps up to the occasion and he figures out I am kind of smart and I can do things and I will track down this gun guy who's supposed to be a secret agent. You know, like, I can do these things and I'm going to do this and I'm going to fucking go save my brother. And it was really cool to see Dante grow and kind of rise to the occasion of what his life has presented him. And similarly with Armando, we get this, like, really interesting redemption story for a character who we thought had died, and everybody kept doing things in his name just to find out that he'd turned evil. Like, there's so much depth around his two brothers, but Cisco's just like, I got powers? Oh, government, cool. We'll hang out. Because you let me kill a parademon? Like, what? I don't even know what his motive was in joining them and staying so long. I mean, I get he's the kid, and he's supposed to be, like, wide-eyed, but it just felt like he was just kind of there. I wasn't interested in Cisco as much as I was his brothers.
Yeah.
But if he were breakdancing, oh, then it would have been on. I mean,
I think it's
cheesy, but I'm being sincere. It really would have been cool to have, like, a shtick.
I agree. It's also kind of unfortunate, too. Like, I was reading the wiki page on Vibe, and I guess, like, one artist hated the character so much he basically refused to draw him because he thought he was, like, a negative stereotype. And it's like, you know, you make a whole 10-issue run. It goes for a year about this guy, and he is, you know, a Latino character in comics. Why do you gotta make him boring? You could do, like, so much. Like, I don't know. I feel like every time there's a really freaking awesome character who isn't a white tagonist, like, that's a good comic right there. Obviously, an awesome character does make for a good comic, but then you add in the fact that it, like, you know, doesn't have to be Bruce Wayne or someone. It adds variety. It adds interest to the world. And then you get, like, okay, here's our Latino character that we're bringing back. And look, he speaks Spanish. And, you know,
he speaks the one Spanish about his brothers and his family.
Yeah, like, you know, and he is stereotypical. Like, and it's bad stereotypes. It's like he has a deadbeat dad, you know. He, his brother can't get a job.
Yeah, and just wants to play soccer all day.
Nobody's going to college. Like,
yeah, Armando was going to go to college.
He was, but then he got dead, but not dead.
I don't think the dad's deadbeat. I think he just works because, like, something happened with the mother. I don't know.
Was it that he worked? It sounded like he just didn't care.
Well, I think he worked a lot, and I think their father was traumatized by the incident when losing Armando. Because, I imagine Armando was the pride of this family, right? Like, good at football, but realized that wasn't going to be his life and career, and genuinely wanted to go to college and get a degree and become smarter and help the family, and then right as he's about to achieve this, he fucking dies. Like, God, if I were a father, and, like, I can't even begin to imagine that kind of shit. Like, that, I completely understand why that father would just withdraw.
Okay, I mean, I kind of viewed him as deadbeat because of the way his kids talked about him.
Yeah, well, especially the way Dante did.
There's an interaction between them in issue two where the dad comes in, Cisco says, "Hey, Dad, what are you doing home? Don't you have work today?" And he says, "Oh, it's Saturday." But, I didn't get the notion of deadbeat. But he was, well, okay. From the comic, he was in the context of the comic, he was like absentee, right? Because we didn't see much of him.
Or any emotionally unavailable, at the very least.
Yeah, definitely. That's the better way to put it. Emotionally unavailable. And like you could tell, these two kids need him. Go on, David.
Yeah, definitely. No, I was just going to tie it back to what you said earlier about, you know, about him being traumatized.
Yeah. And it's just, this one incident pulled apart the family because these kids need him. Like, Cisco is obviously really smart and capable, and you get that from the beginning. Like, Armando says that Cisco's going to be the one to go to college next, and that Cisco's going to be smarter and more accomplished than he is, you know? And then we cut to 10 years, or however many years later, and Cisco's working at fucking Best Buy, you know? And, like, Dante, somebody just needs to push Dante to get a job, and not in the, it's Saturday, we keep track of days when we have jobs kind of a thing, but, like, you know, actually push Dante to be more responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these kids need him as much as he probably needs them, but just this one event just ripped the family apart.
Yeah.
But, like, all of that is so interesting except for the main protagonist. It's like everybody around Cisco is interesting, but Cisco is not. Like, even, what's the guy's name? The agent. Agent Gunn. Even he's kind of interesting.
I liked him. What was weird to me was that they only gave you two details about his personal life. And one is he has a dead daughter, which is like every mysterious agent in comics.
Yeah.
And then he has a husband. And I feel like because they didn't reveal anything else, it left me questioning whether it was, this is just who his character is, and, you know, would have seen the same scene with his wife who was an FCA agent if it had been a woman. Or is it something they put in to be like, hey, we have a gay guy here, just so you know.
I think it's more that. Like, I think it's more just, hey, we have a gay guy.
I never trust it when people put minorities in comics or, you know, just when minorities in media, I guess, like underrepresented groups, and then don't develop them because it starts feeling, I won't accuse this comic of tokenism. I don't think it did that, but it feels very shallow. Like, Gunn was cool. He was interesting, like, he was a really capable, interesting character who was, like, he knew what was going on morally. He wasn't like Waller. He was probably my favorite character in this. And at the same time, It's like they don't really develop him outside of his work. But then they show you his personal life, and it feels really, I don't know, weird.
Yeah, but Gunn, like, his gay husband, I don't think it's necessarily just tokenism. Because it was just tokenism. He would just go home and give his gay husband a kiss. Because, ooh, kissing comics, ooh. Actually, I don't think they even did that in this comic.
No.
But I like that they gave it, like, they gave it a hetero problem and put it on a homo relationship. You know, they gave him the problem of, that used to be my job, but I lost that job, so now I'm just sitting around the house with fucking nothing to do. You know, and the same problem with him taking his ring off. Like, that's a problem that you see heroes do regardless of their relationship. Like, there are people out there who want to hurt the ones that I love. And so it's not just tokenism, because if it was just tokenism, it would be like New 52 Alan Scott's boyfriend who dies in the first issue. Like, hey, he's gay, boyfriend's dead, never gonna have another relationship.
Yeah, it would just be like, oh, look at this guy, he's got a husband.
Yeah, but like, this is actually like, they talk about the relationship, they put things in it that are heteronormative things to help you kind of relate to the fact, in case you're one of those people who's like, I don't want gay people in my comic. Like, I mean, those people are out there, it's fucking ridiculous, but they are. And so this is like, okay, you know how you're scoffing at this and thinking it's so much more strange and different or whatever? Here's a problem you might have had. Like, maybe your wife got laid off and is puttering in the house and has fucking nothing to do and she's getting upset about it. This is the exact same problem. This dude is having the exact same problem with his dude friend.
Well, and then like, in issue 10, they're working together.
Yeah, and that's awesome.
Hey, honey, I got you a job as a sniper.
I know, that was so... Okay, but that was a little bit... I did get a little bit cringeworthy when they were working together and, like, flirting over the comm line. It's like, oh, okay. That's a little gay stereotypy. The overly flirty gay person.
I think what we can all agree on is that this is not the worst portrayal of a gay relationship in comics.
No. Such high praise.
Well, I think it's better. I think in the spectrum of this kind of thing in comics, it's like, this is whatchamacallit, this one is above average. How about that?
Yeah, no, and I was just teasing because it's not terrible. I guess part of it, I just really like Gunn and I wanted to see more about his life outside of his job because he was cool.
Well, and I really like the way that his development kind of was like the antithesis for Dante. Like, Dante went from being completely like street, whatever, no job, just kicking around a soccer ball, to possibly working for Amanda Waller and being a government like double agent thing against Gunn. I don't know. And then Gunn, like, over the course of these 10 issues, like, it slowly gets revealed to you that, yeah, he works for Waller, and yeah, he works for Argus, which kind of here or there might be the bad dudes in the New 52, or at least they're that kind of ambiguous government organization that wants to keep a check on the superheroes for no reason other than, no, God, we're afraid because they have powers, you know? And, like, he goes from being that agent who you think stands for that organization, who you realize is, like, actually... You don't know how he feels about all these people he has cooped up. You don't know whether or not he thinks it's right. You know, like, you start to see that maybe he's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place himself, and he just needs to pay the bills for his husband and for the family he has. And it's like, I like the way that he gets developed over the course of these 10 issues. It's really interesting to see him change too.
Definitely. And I think he is a good foil against Waller, because at first it seems like, you know, maybe she's more strict or, like, more fanatical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, so she has the right thing at heart. And maybe she does, because it sounds like they're dealing with some really serious shit. But she's really ruthless, and she seems very untrustworthy as a good guy. Like, if this series had continued, I would not have been surprised with some reveal that she was actually quite evil.
Well, that's kind of how she is in DC. Like, even pre-New 52. She's like this ambiguous government agent that you don't really know. She's
not evil, but she's not good. She's an
antagonist to the heroes because she wants to do things in a particular way. Does that make sense?
I think I would say she believes that heroes aren't good for national security. You know? She's like, she has the realization as somebody who's in charge of a national security division, like, Superman could swoop in and say, fuck you, my country. And that scares the shit out of her, and she wants to check against that. But she's also not Lex Luthor because she's not fucking crazy. Like, she'll look at Lex and say, I want to use you to my ends. But at the same time, you're fucking crazy, and I know you're evil as shit too, so I'm definitely not aligning with you. So she's like, she's definitely against the heroes, but with her own rationale that doesn't make her evil, but definitely you don't root for her.
She's against the heroes when it doesn't suit her ends.
Yes, perfect.
Yeah.
When she doesn't think it suits America's ends.
Yeah. That's another good thing to point out, is that she's not really, she has her own agenda in such that it deviates from, like, the superheroes' agendas, but she's not really out for herself in the way that, like, Lex Luthor is.
Yeah, like, and I don't know what's with Checkmate in the New 52, but Checkmate is, like, DC's kind of version of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I don't know if there's Checkmate in the New 52.
I don't know, but Checkmate's kind of like DC's S.H.I.E.L.D., but a little bit different, and Checkmate has a dual-sided structure. There's the white side and the black side, and the black side is like black ops, and the white side is like public peacekeeping troops and that kind of thing, you know? And Amanda Waller was in charge of black ops. She was the Black Queen.
Yeah, didn't we see that in... we read it was in, Suicide Squad.
Might have been that. Might have been Countdown to Infinite Crisis, I think.
Yeah, with
Ted. We get Checkmate in there. Because Max Lord... Lord is the Black King, or I don't know.
Yeah, he becomes the Black King.
Yeah, he takes over a little bit of Checkmate, too. But Waller was involved in that organization. And that organization is not evil. I mean, not more than S.H.I.E.L.D. is with Hydra and all, but...
So we're talking, like, lawful neutral here.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Perfect way to put it.
Okay.
They probably think that they're lawful good, but... Nah, I think lawful neutral is a better way to put it.
Yeah. So then,
what's interesting is this: the first time we've seen the skinny Amanda Waller.
This is the first time I've seen her, and I miss the Wall.
Oh yeah, I remember her now.
She was wide and awesome, and she was great for comics because she was a body type that wasn't like every other woman in comics.
Yeah,
and
it was like never really an issue.
Yeah, and even though she was a wide-bodied person and short and all of these kinds of things, it never changed who she was. It didn't matter for her character. She stood right up to, like, there's a really great panel of her, like, talking down and scaring the shit out of Batman. Because Amanda fucking Waller knows how to talk some shit. And she's not fucking afraid. It doesn't matter if she's a foot and a half shorter than he is and can probably not run from him in the least. But, like... She doesn't take shit. And it was great that, like, her body type didn't matter at all. And this was something that caused a lot of moaning and bitching when New 52 Amanda Waller was shown to be, like, just the skinny Amanda Waller. And, I mean, I understand why there's the bitching and moaning, because I do miss the Wall, and I think that she was good for comics, especially when you look at people like Starfire in the New 52. Like, everybody in the New 52 is sexified. Everybody.
You know what's interesting? Amanda Waller appears in Arrow, right?
Yeah, she's in the Arrow TV show.
She's thin, and I mean, you often have thin people in TV shows, but she's thin there. I wonder if there's any relation, like they want to keep it within a continuity or something.
No, I think the TV universe is a separate. It's not the same continuity as like the comics. I mean, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know, I was going to say maybe from a familiarity point of view, but like, I think most DC fans are more familiar with the Wall version of Amanda Waller.
Yeah, because she was on Justice League Unlimited and some of the animated movies and stuff too.
Yeah.
At least they kept her black.
Yeah.
That would have pissed people off. Holy shit.
Ooh. That would have been a good move.
I just realized that there is a character in Arrow and Flash that is named what's Paco Ramon? Yeah, there is a Paco Ramon in Flash.
Ooh.
He works at Star Labs.
Oh.
Oh, so okay.
He might be Vibe related.
So, like, we're like deviating from the comic a little bit, but
it's fine. Not much in here.
The Flash TV show. So the Flash is the first character in Arrow to have like superpowers.
Hmm.
I mean, Deathstroke kind of does because he has like his, you know, like the Captain America-esque super soldier serum.
Yeah.
But the Flash is the first person who has like superpowers.
Yeah.
And apparently that what this show's going to do is introduce more superpowered characters. Because, I mean, obviously Oliver Queen doesn't have powers. But...
Did you watch
that show yet, Andy?
No.
So you haven't seen Summer Glau as Ravager?
I have. I have seen that. I've seen plenty of that. There's YouTube videos of scenes of where they just cut out all of the scenes with Summer Glau. I haven't watched those, but I've seen some of the just clips of her in the show.
It's really a pretty good show. I need to watch the show. I enjoy it. It's not the best show on TV. I mean, it's not like watching Star Trek or something. But yeah. It's a fun show, and if you like it. If you like comics or if you're a DC fan, it's an enjoyable show. Because there's a lot of Easter eggs for comic book readers. I kind of hate the term Easter eggs, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. So, what do we think of the non-humans in this? The whole, what was the name of that dimension?
Prydol or Pryhall? I feel like we didn't even hear about it until like issue 10.
Yeah. So, there was a lot of confusion for me. It took me, like, two rereads. In the notes I say, like, you know, is Cynthia Darkseid's daughter? And then I realized that Darkseid's daughter was being held separately. So,
yeah,
my
that
first
was really
question
at first.
With this whole world, what the hell does it have to do with Darkseid's daughter? Because they keep, like, making this connection about if, you know, such and such gets through from this place and finds Gypsy, or if Gypsy goes back to her world. As far as I can tell, Prydol does not have anything to do with that, but they built it up like it did.
Yeah, I was confused about the relationship between those two. Like, I know Cynthia's not Darkseid's daughter, but when Darkseid's daughter escaped, I was like, okay, that just seems like it was an accident. It had nothing to do with Rupture or Cynthia or Vibe.
Yeah.
It's just like, she happened to have been held there, and there was a big fight because you did something stupid and captured Vibe, and now she got out. And it's like they're only tangentially related, like, story threads. I don't know. I had no idea Darkseid was supposed to be extra dimensional in this.
I don't think he is.
Or that's just how he travels?
I'm not 100% sure.
I don't know.
Because they haven't really explored the New Gods that much. Actually, the New Gods, like, thing in New 52 started yesterday with yesterday's Bulls.
Oh.
Or yesterday's comics.
So they have a new New God title?
It's called, well, so it's first, it's an event first. It's a Green Lantern crossover event called Godhead. And so the first issue is called Godhead, and now the rest of it is like, I think it's like 6 months. I forget how long the event is, but basically in typical big two publisher fashion, you have to read all the Green Lantern titles to get the whole story.
Yep. Who's the main lantern in the storyline? Or is it, like, just all of them? Like, a free-for-all?
I haven't read it yet, but I think it is, like, a free-for-all thing.
Okay.
Because, like, so the issue... So Godhead number one has, like, some kind of weird Mother Box Infinity Gauntlet-looking thing on it.
Yeah.
I think it's like a glove. I don't think it's Infinity Gauntlet. It's like a glove with a box in the hand. And then the first, or part two, is in Green Lantern, like the Hal Jordan book, and it has Metron on the cover too.
That like, I like.
I kind of was like kind of interested in it, and then I was like, oh, Metron, I'll read this.
Because Metron's like the Watcher, but cooler.
I can report back next week or something about, I'll probably read them after we're done recording, but I didn't get my comics till today, so.
Mm. Yeah, because, I mean, like, yeah, who there's Mordith, right? Which they just call her Mordith for, like, half of the comic, and then you realize, oh, Mordith is like a whole family. It's not her first name. Like, I was
that
really...
was confusing.
I was really confused when that was happened, when Breacher was like, I'm such and such Mordith. I'm like, oh my god, you're the evil guy. Or you're the evil chick, you're the villain. And then it's like, oh no, and then my wife is such and such Mordith, and our daughter is Gypsy Mordith, and it's
Cynthia.
Like, oh...
Cynthia.
Like I said, guys, it's just they spell it different.
But it's like, okay, it shouldn't have needed the explanation. You could have just given them different names.
It seems kind of weird that like there's a guy named Breacher, and then and his daughter is named Cynthia. Of like all the names, like you think he would have some kind of alien extra-dimensional name? I don't know.
It is.
Maybe that's what the extra N is. The other N is for the... Because it's extra-dimensional, so it has an extra N.
Because by the end of this, I really... I really didn't like Breacher. It's like, that's a dick move.
Yeah.
I was totally ready to be the martyr, but now I don't got to. Fuck you, buddy!
That was a weird twist, because the whole time you expect him to be like... benevolent father figure, and Gypsy's like, yes, my dad was the lord of a wonderful tribe, and you know, when Armando comes for her, she's like, oh, my father's dead, and it sounds like, oh, he was this great guy, but then it just ends with him being like, oh, I don't have to sacrifice myself. Yeah.
Lucky you came along. All right.
it was so out of nowhere.
It's like, okay, fuck that dimension. It can burn in hell. Even the quote-unquote good guy from that dimension is a dick.
Breacher had a cool costume, though. I think he may have had the coolest costume.
He did, that's true. I don't know, I really like Vibe's costume.
I liked
so
Rupture's
bad.
Costume
I like it.
Too, actually.
Can we talk about Vibe's costume and how sometimes it's a shirt and sometimes it's like two vests plus a shirt and sometimes it's just two vests? Because, okay, so, Multivest guy here has the outer padded vest, which we all know and love.
Yep.
He also has the yellow hoodie vest, which is my personal favorite. And then he has a black turtleneck under it, except sometimes in the art, especially in issues like 8, 9, and 10, when they're patching up the hole in his chest, there will randomly be no black turtleneck, and it shows him unzipping it, but then it just shows the folds of the yellow hoodie vest. And that's not how shirts work.
Oh, that's actually in issue 9, there is a shot of him like falling, and he has you can see the zipper on the hoodie part.
Yeah,
so it's like hoodie. I think the black is part of the hoodie.
But that's the thing. Sometimes it's drawn as being, like, where the yellow parts connect to each other. And then other times it's drawn where they're, like, separate, joined by a black stripe in the middle. And it doesn't... It's not the same throughout. And sometimes the yellow part's actually red.
Well, he has a bunch of different vests, and he hides them in little pocket dimensions.
Like how the Flash keeps his costume in his ring.
Exactly. And he just vibrates a little dimension open, grabs his vest, and changes it out between frames.
I think my favorite part about his costume is that his main outer vest is, like, quilted.
Yes!
So I think it's not supposed to be quilted, but it looks quilted to me.
It is quilted. It
is. It's supposed to probably be like armor or some high-density fiber that, you know.
No, he like stole it from the Ren Faire.
No, Gunn's husband quilted it up. He's bored at home. That's my headcanon now.
Oh my god.
You don't want your chest to get cold while you're traveling through dimensions.
You never know when you're going to go to a frosty dimension.
Did he really steal it from the Ren Faire?
No, I mean that.
I thought maybe I had missed that part.
See, the best part about this comic is that statement was in any way believable.
Well, I mean, it wasn't a Ren Faire, right? It was
like
it could
have come from Gemworld, from Amethyst
market.
Dimension.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Amethyst kind of medieval. Princess of Gemworld, because she was awesome.
Dude, we should read Amethyst, because.
Okay.
All right, we'll do Amethyst.
We'll put that on the list.
Yep, Amethyst. We can do rock themed stuff.
Amethyst. We already read Terra, so we can't do Terra.
Star Sapphire, because that's a gem. We got words in there.
There's probably a gem comic too, like, you know, gem the.
Oh yeah.
Okay, we're going on a. Okay, this is a big old tangent.
Best tangent.
Do we have anything like useful to say about this comic?
So
this is probably like the worst episode ever.
So Gypsy was a gypsy, right?
But she was part of the original Justice League Detroit, right? With her skirt and gypsy.
But I don't think she was like an extra dimensional.
No, she was just like normal gypsy.
Was she called Gypsy before she got her gypsy outfit?
Yeah, her code name was Gypsy before, because I think her people are basically space gypsies.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I remember that. She was talking about how they, like, travel to different dimensions and trade with people.
Isn't that racist?
Like, she was like, super barter skills.
Gypsy is a racist term.
Like, they should have named her Nomad or something. I know it was a character.
I think the PC term is Romani.
Well, she was a gypsy was her name before, so
yeah. And it's
fine. Know it was pre-existing. It's just really.
It's fine, and we can have heroes named like Red Chief and stuff too. It's cool.
But no, it's not even that. It's just like in the comic, it seems so goofy that Waller would be like, "This one is gypsy." Like, I can't see her making decision.
And Breacher got named Breacher because he was a Breacher. Like, that's what I love about, like, these other characters halfway through they get introduced. Like, oh, Gypsy's a Gypsy. We call Gypsy Gypsy because she's a Gypsy. And we're going to call Breacher Breacher because he's a Breacher. I'm like, all right, let's just call her what it is.
How did Roger get his name?
From his football days. Armando Rupture Ramon.
Yeah.
Was it, Andy?
It was.
That's how you know he.
Oh my god!
That's how you know he's a good guy still.
Yeah,
in his
that's
heart.
What that's what Vibe was saying. Like, even the name, man. Rupture was his name when he was a football player. That's how you know he's really in there somewhere. That's
I totally forgot about that.
That was a real thing in this. I know he's good because he used his football name when he murdered millions upon millions of people. That's how you know he's really in there.
Do you think he, like, spiked his axe at the end when he destroyed a planet?
Yes.
No, but seriously, he should have died.
I mean, he probably died.
No, they're still looking for him. He's not dead. It's comics.
No, Armando should be dead. Mm. I don't know. I get that it wasn't him, all of that kind of stuff, but, like, really, come on.
How Bucky, when he was Winter Soldier.
Yeah, or Picard, when he was a Borg, when he was...
Locutus?
Yeah, Locutus.
Locutus.
Like, come on. Locutus. You kind of... I mean, I know it's not you, but it takes a whole lot of protagonist power to not have that guy get killed. Like...
I mean, It's Vibe's love for his brother. It's the power of love. It's
the power,
Huey Lewis song.
The power of brothers.
No, it's a Huey Lewis song. That's their favorite. That's their song.
Okay. That's their song?
It's the power of love. I can't do Huey Lewis in the news voice.
That's okay. I don't need you to.
You know what's actually kind of funny? The whole Armando dying thing. I was like, well, that's his girl in the refrigerator. And you know how Gail Simone's, like, second part of that theory is it's dudes defrosting. So if you're a male who dies in order to inspire a hero, you end up coming back. That actually happened here. He wasn't dead. He defrosted.
Oh my god, you're right.
And I kind of suspect that he will continue to be defrosted. That's part of why I believe he's not really dead.
Well, they have to defrost him for a little bit longer. He's not ready to go in the oven.
If they're... I mean, this is how comics plotting works. If Vibe is looking for his brother, he's going to find his brother. He's not just going to be like, oh, he actually did die. Whoops. He's going to find his brother, and then, like, if this comic was still continuing, they'd probably have another epic battle, and then maybe his brother would die for real. But you can't just let it be the way it is.
Maybe he'll find him on Gemworld, married to Amethyst, and he'll be Rupture, Prince of Gemworld.
Oh. That would be... We are writing a fan fiction.
Because that's what everyone's on the internet is aching for, is Vibe fan fiction.
Not even Vibe.
Vibe's brother.
Vibe's brother and Amethyst.
Rupture fan
fiction. I'm totally shipping Vibe, or Rupture and Amethyst.
What is it, one true pairing?
Yes. It's their OTP.
Oh god, okay.
That's my headcanon, Andy.
Alright, I like that headcanon better than mine. Can I adopt it?
Yes.
Alright.
Yeah, we gotta start a Tumblr with this. So, my other character question is, the cover of issue 9 has Gypsy sitting in a throne looking very evil, and it says, "Betrayed by Gypsy?"
Was it Gypsy, though, or was it her mom?
I think that's Gypsy.
I think it's because, isn't that the issue where it gets revealed that Gypsy isn't really who she's been saying she was?
I think she's in an underground prison the entire time.
Oh.
Isn't she?
I don't have it in front of me.
I don't understand. I'm paging through it. We meet the mother, and she's very evil. And then Gypsy is in prison, not saying anything or betraying anybody. And then... Oh, Breacher is a douche nozzle. And that's it.
You know, I'm flipping through issue 9, and I don't see Gypsy at all in this issue.
So I'm pretty sure we were not.
I see her in the prison.
Yeah, we were not betrayed by Gypsy. But what is that marketing?
It's like clickbait.
Like Batman on the cover of issue... whatever. Not Batman.
Well, I mean, it's like clickbait on the internet.
Yeah. It's just
That was not Batman. I remember that. And I was like, what the fuck is Batman doing here? Awesome! Oh, wait, it's just Gypsy.
Anyways.
Oh, man. Yeah, this comic was...
Like, there's nothing bad about it, though, right? Like, there's... stuff, but, like, there's nothing in this that I'm going to slam as hard as, I don't know, 90% of Spawn.
Well, no, this wasn't bad. This embodied the whole feel of the New 52. Like, a lot of the comics they put out were okay. You know, we saw some really spectacular runs.
Aquaman was awesome.
That was good. Batman... Court of Owls was really good.
Oh, yeah,
really
like the whole Scott Snyder run. It's still really good.
Wonder Woman, I hear, is really awesome.
All-Star Western started really strong.
Because Jimmy Palmy fucking naughty.
And, like, Batwoman started really strong, although I hear worse things about it these days. But I think, you know, we have, of course, a few titles that are going to be exemplary, but a lot of the New 52 kind of felt like, at least to me, a lot of the stuff I picked up was like, here is predictable plot with okay characters and the art's pretty nice, but I won't remember reading this a year from now.
Oh, like, oh crap, I can't remember. It was the, Voodoo. Voodoo, the stripper hero?
Well, she's from, she's a Wildstorm.
Yeah, but she was a stripper, right?
I don't know. I actually have no idea. I think she's a telepathic stripper.
What?
Yeah.
Or a telekinetic stripper?
Something like that. We gotta read this.
Just throw that in with the mineral arc, too. We'll figure a way to fit it in.
Ramethyst rocks rock hard stripper?
Abs?
Pole? Nailed it.
I don't know.
I wasn't going for abs, but sure. So anyway, there's nothing, I don't know.
Like, I don't see myself remembering this comic a year from now.
That's a great way to put it.
I enjoyed it well enough, but...
I mean, I think, like, Vibe really would be, like, a cool piece to a Justice League series, right? Like, yeah. I really think he would be a cool addition, but I don't know if we need to flesh out Vibe's backstory with his own 10-issue run. I don't know how many people were hankering for this, and I don't know how many people were sated by its existence. satiated, I don't know, one of those two.
I feel like he would have worked well in the new Justice League that's led by Booster Gold, too, that also has Batman on it. Like, that's a good dynamic for him. He's young, and he's a little goofy, but more serious than Booster. Like, I would have rather seen that, but this... And it's, you know, the Justice League's vibe. I thought I was going to see more of the Justice League. I didn't see him in a team at all.
Yeah, like, my favorite moments in this comic were when they were, like, the little moments surrounding his involvement with the Justice League. Like, when he went to Washington, D.C. to formally join the team, and he's calling his brother. Like, that phone call was awesome. Like, I'm here. I'm, like, the first one in the conference room. There's nobody else here. They gave me an office, and they gave me a computer. I don't know what for. Can you sell the computer? No, I think I'm supposed to use it just for, like, Justice League stuff. Like, that whole thing was great, because I don't know if anybody listening knows this, but I work with young people. A lot of times when I hire somebody, the job that I give them is the very first office job they have. Most of the time I hire them, they've done, like, Jamba Juice or retail or something, but I'm, like, their first office job. So when they show up and I'm like, here's a MacBook Pro, they're like, what? So it's really interesting to see that, like, genuine reaction in a superhero comic. Like, this is the way kids are when they get immediately thrust into a position of, I'm just going to start assuming you're a grown-up and that you're going to act like a grown-up, so here's a bunch of grown-up things. You know? Like, that would really be Cisco's reaction, like, this is a big room. You sure you're supposed to give me that? Is this really happening? I got a great view from my office. What the fuck? Like, it's a whole lot of just confusion, and I don't know, and this is awesome, but did I earn this? Is this what? Is this, like, that was really fun for me to read, and just, I think that's something that's got a high level of fidelity for a target demographic that I think would really enjoy reading comics. Like, that was one of my favorite moments of this comic.
Yeah, you know, I feel like Vibe would have done well on something like Young Justice. Like, yeah, an older iteration of it. So, like, you know, later teens.
You could have Cisco, Ramon. You could have Jaime Reyes. You could have Blue Beetle.
Yeah.
That's good.
They'd be cool together. Like, half of the Teen Titans. Yeah, maybe that's what he should be on. Maybe he should be on the fucking Teen Titans. But he's a little bit old for that. But they're all old for that, really.
Well, I mean, some versions of Teen Titans, they're like 19. He could do that.
Or
and I think
they have what the Titans, which is like the adult,
like the early 30s version. Teen Titans.
Is that how old they are in that? I mean,
no, I don't think that's. I think they're also. I think Batman's supposed to be like 35, and the Teen Titans are supposed to be like 17, and everybody's kind of in between.
Yeah, and I think it's that Vibe still has this legacy as a camp character. And when you put him in as a for-sure superhero, it doesn't quite fit. And part of that's his personality. He's a kid. Like you said, Andy, he's just staring in wonderment at all these things. And it feels like it's very endearing, but it doesn't fit the very, like, dark DC environment that sometimes they try to do.
Well, I mean, I think that they could successfully create a, like, more serious version of him, at least for small amounts of time. Because, I mean, they did that. I think they did that successfully with Booster Gold, in starting with 52, and then the Booster Gold series that spun out of that.
Mm-hmm.
There was the humor that we're used to with Booster, but there was also, like, an overarching plot and serious consequences and stuff. And the DC has successfully done that in the past. So I think Vibe is a character that could be successful and a fan favorite.
I think it's just a little harder because he has a background that might be working against that. But, you know, you do that well, and it's surprises like that that end up spectacular.
Yeah. Agreed.
Mm-hmm. So, the last thing I really want to talk about is, would this comic have felt better or been less of a kind of letdown if it wasn't a reboot of Vibe? Because I have a lot of sentimental, ambiguous, completely non-rational attachment to the campy previous incarnation of Vibe. Like, the breakdancing Justice League Detroit. It's just so campy and cheesy, and that's the kind of comics that I remember that I really liked reading and that I enjoy. And because I have that attachment, maybe part of me is reading this character and giving him short shrift when, legitimately, he might not be that bad, but he's just not the Vibe I wanted. Like, maybe if they called him, I don't know, Oscillation or something. I don't know.
Wavelength.
I don't know. So just some other completely different name, right? And maybe giving him, like, a little hint here or there in the costume and not such an overt callback to the original costume. And just kind of went in a new direction. Just been like, this is our reboot of the idea of Vibe, but we're completely changing everything. Like, this has enough elements to it from the original that I feel like I can draw connections. And I feel like I'm bringing things to the comic that might be hurting my reading of Cisco Ramon.
You know, I don't have that, like, strong perception of Vibe. Like, I kind of knew who he was, but I wasn't, you know, I hadn't really grown up with it. I didn't have a strong attachment. I feel like you could put any character in here, and it just, the plot was not very memorable, and the character development wasn't very memorable. So I don't think that it's just because it's a Vibe that we feel this way.
Okay. Then I don't feel so bad. Did either one of you guys have a favorite moment in this comic?
That's okay. That sigh was unfair, because I liked the comic overall, but I don't know. It's kind of hard for me to pick up. I don't know. Let me think about it.
Okay.
Do you have a favorite moment, Andy, that you want
to
share?
Well, I mean, mine was his phone call to his brother when he was in D.C. One of my other favorite things in this comic, which is not a positive thing, but just made me literally, like, laugh out loud heartily, was when you got the flashback when all the dark side thing happened and Armando supposedly died. And then they cut to today, but then today has an asterisk, and there's a box coming off of the text box that explains the asterisk and says these events occurred before Justice League number one. And it's like, yeah, New 52. Today, asterisk. Like, I don't know. That was a very New 52 moment for me, where you have to put an asterisk on today. But yeah, the Washington, D.C. Did you, Jen?
That's a little hard. I don't think I did. I enjoyed the scene where he's trying to break out of, what did they call it?
The circus.
Yeah. And he goes berserk and releases everyone, but otherwise, nothing struck me as being, like, particularly
cool.
Yeah, or strong.
All right.
Thinking back, I liked the guest appearance by the Suicide Squad.
Although oh, yeah, I was, forgot about that.
I was kind of like, the character, what was his name, Crowbar? I was like, they just copied the Wrecker from Marvel. Because that's exactly the same thing. Like, the Wrecker is a guy who has a magic crowbar.
Really? So I was
kind of disappointed with that.
That seems like a really lame power, too.
Well, so his... So the Wrecker, there's more to him than that. His crowbar is like Thor's hammer, kind of. Like, while he's holding it, he has all these... he becomes, like, super strong and invulnerable and stuff. Because the crowbar got accidentally imbued with Asgardian magic. And then, that's basically it. And then he shares the power from the crowbar with the other characters from the Wrecking Crew.
That sounds very comics.
It sounds lame, but he is kind of like a D-list. They're kind of like a D-list jokey villains from DC, but or not DC, Marvel. But you know, I like the Wrecking Crew. Anyways, yep.
Mm-hmm.
Should we just rate this now?
Let's rate it.
Like we're ready to rate this.
I agree.
Can I go first? I'm just gonna
get this out of the way.
I'm gonna give this a 2.5. When I first started reading it, I was enjoying the comic, and then towards the end, I felt stuff kind of just got like. It just like moved it like all of a sudden they're trying to wrap up the story, and I feel like the change of the pace kind of had a negative impact on my enjoyment of the comic. But overall, I thought it was fine. I don't really have any real complaints about it, but I don't have anything like great to say. You know, if somebody was a Vibe fan and they were like, "Man, should I read the new 52 Vibe?" I would probably say no.
Yeah.
And if somebody asked me for my honest opinion, I'd say, it's okay. It's okay.
It's okay.
So, yeah. I don't have much else to say about it, but... So, 2.5.
Jen?
I would also say 2.5. It felt very average to me. And I always feel bad when I rate comics lower, and there's nothing, like, wrong with them. It just didn't grip me in any way, and I didn't feel interested enough that if there had been more issues that I'd read more. So I don't know, like, the art was good, the writing on a page-to-page level was fine, I just felt like the overall plot did not engage me and the characters didn't interest me, and I don't really know what it was about it just felt kind of dull. So It was average. Like, I didn't dislike it, but I wasn't, like, you know, world's biggest fan.
Andy?
Yeah, I'm going to say what I said in the beginning. There's nothing wrong with this comic. There's nothing awesome about it either. I don't know, it's just, it's there. So I'm going to also have to give it a 2.5. I feel like that's not a bad rating. I'm gonna also rationalize my 2.5 like Jen did, because I've been saying for a couple months now that my average is gonna have to go up because I feel like the average quality of comics has been going up, and so giving this an average I think is like pretty solid. There wasn't a time when I was reading this that I yawned and wanted to stop reading, you know, like it did a decent enough job of carrying through the story and having me enjoy the experience of going along for the ride. But I just kind of went along for the ride. Nothing made me go, ooh, that's kind of, oh, yeah, what's going on with this character? Oh, that's neat. Like, there wasn't any of that. But there was nothing that, like, made me go, oh, that reminds me of Spawn.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with the sentiment that there was not really a point in my reading where I was like, when will this end? You know, it never really felt like a chore reading it.
Yeah.
But.
Exactly. That's the grip. Never felt like a chore. Perfect phrasing. So anyway, I guess that wraps it up for this week. Sorry, Vibe. I really I really wish now I could have found a good old Justice League Detroit version to read. But anyway, we're going to make up for it next week, because next week, I already know this is going to be awesome. Next week, we're reading Archie Meets Kiss.
Yes. I'm excited for this.
I know why you're excited, because you grew up reading Archie comics.
Yeah, I read, not just growing up, I've read a lot of Archie comics recently, because my mother-in-law loves Archie comics, because when she moved to the U.S., that's kind of how she learned to read English.
Mm.
So every time I go to my in-law's house, there's Archie Double Digest and stuff in the bathroom all the time, so I'm awesome. Always reading material. And I've read a lot of Archie, even recently. And I like Archie comics. It's if you like things like Punisher Max or something, and that's the only kind of comic you like, you're not gonna like Archie. But Archie is a fun comic too. So in its own way, it's a fun comic.
Good.
You're never gonna get any gritty realism with Archie.
Good. I'm down for that. So yeah, that's next week. That collects Archie issues 627 to 630 by Alex Segura. And if you want to know what we have coming up after that, we have one more episode after that for our heroes music themed kind of arc. We have one more of that coming up after this one. If you want to know what that one is, go to our website, which is www.apsupercast.com. On the right, there's a button. It says Future Shows. Click on that bad boy. There's a big old list of everything we have coming up to, but not after issue, not after episode 200, because episode 200, guys, that's when everything changes.
Who's gonna? I don't even know.
Nothing
what's gonna
will
happen.
Be the same. One of us is gonna die. One of us might die.
I think so. Or one of us, you know, we might be betrayed by Jen. Who knows?
Yeah, it might happen. Hard to say.
It could be anything. There's going to be one of those covers, which is an homage to the Days of Future Past X-Men cover that everybody does homage to.
It'll be hollow foil.
Hollow foil, yes.
It'll come with a trading card, and it will be polybagged.
Exactly. That's going to be episode 200. That's coming up. If you have some suggestions for what you want us to do after episode 200, assuming that we will even have a similar format in any which way, that we're all still alive, you can send us a recommendation via email at
atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
Plus, there's always all the social media stuff, facebook.com/apsupercast, twitter.com/apsupercast, and apsupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yes. All right, everybody. Until next week, goodbye.
Goodbye.